At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, April 20th, 2023 edition. And since it is Thursday, we are lucky to have Luke Guerrero back with us. Welcome back, Luke.
Thanks, Justin. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and this is an interesting time in markets and a lot of geopolitical winds that are continuing to fly all which way and influence the market in so many different manners. And that's what we are here to help unpack, is try to distill the complexities of today's market, which are ever-changing, and try to distill them down to what matters and what will impact the economies and markets. And so we are here to answer your finance and investment questions per usual. And that is to do that in a straight, unbiased way and help you build the tools to become a successful investor. I know it's difficult in these times, and there's a lot of data flying at everybody, right? Showing up on your phone and social media, and some of it is relevant and others is more hyperbole, and we're trying to cut through the wheat, find the wheat through the chaff. Is that, what's the saying?
Find the wheat. Separate the wheat from the chaff.
Separate the wheat from the chaff. That's what it is. Okay. Yep. Thank you, Luke. That's why we have Luke.
That's why you have me around.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're ready for your calls at 888-99-CHART. If you're listening live during our 4 to 5 live show, you can call and talk to us directly. Or if you're listening after hours, no big deal. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can call that same number, 888-99-CHART. In order to get your question in, and we will answer it on a future show. Now, we have a lot of material to cover today. One is in regards to the headline, are we in a freight recession? And we are in the midst of earnings season, and there's a lot to glean from these earnings reports. And one of the largest freight operators, J.B. Hunt, recently had some earnings, and we're going to dig into what the CEO said on the recent earnings call to give some insight into what's happening in the goods market and ultimately the freight market, okay? And then we're going to look at SEC rules, SEC crackdown on the crypto space. I think that's a very interesting story. Two sides to, I guess, the coin, would you say, Luke? And I think that one is important because this is this new industry that is a lot of people are interested in, right, Luke? And do you think this is going to be a big story going forward, this shift in the regulatory winds?
Yeah, it could be. There's always a careful balancing act when new technology comes around where you have to balance the benefits it gives to society, but also try and mitigate the risks. And there are some serious financial risks associated with crypto.
And when there's no rules, the bad actors tend to take advantage of that. And that's what you've seen of late. And that's what Gary Gensler is trying to cut off. And that's what we're going to discuss. We also want to touch on how investors are positioning themselves in regards to consumer discretionary stocks versus consumer staples. So basically bets on where the economy is headed. And then lastly, Bed Bath & Beyond. Bed Bath & Beyond looks to be ready to file for bankruptcy. And I think there is some great lessons from that story. So we're going to look at all of that on today's show, as well as your voice bank questions. One is on investing strategy and the other on Porsche Automobile Holdings. And we have an iTunes review question as well. So we have this all planned for this episode of Invest Talk. And of course, your live calls, most importantly, at 888-99-CHART. Now let's take a look at the market today. Luke, what do we have in store for the market?
Yeah, the S&P 500 was down about 60 basis points, and that was dragged, and I use dragged to really tell you what Tesla was doing today, which was down 9.75% on some missed revenue.
Yeah, they were down. They had a margins were squeezed, right? They think they've cut the price of their cars, what, six times this year?
Six times this year. And really, people are pointing out that they hit earnings. But if you think about it, analysts have been cutting earnings for the entire year so far. So yeah, that's really, if you think about it in the long run, how people have been thinking how Tesla is going to perform, it's a miss all around. And because of its size, it kind of dragged down the market with it.
Yeah, and AT&T was also down 10%. So they had rough earnings. What were the gainers? I didn't look at that today. XPO. Okay, I'm trying to find any big companies, big gains. I don't see that. So yeah, the bigger cap names definitely struggled. Ford Motors down 2.8%. NIO, I think in sympathy to Tesla, the Chinese EV maker, down 5.8%. And Nokia was down 9% as well. Nvidia down nearly 3%. So definitely those large cap growth names dragging down the market overall. The small caps, they were only down about a little less than 0.5%, whereas the large caps were down more than 0.6%. So definitely underperformance there for those large caps today. Now let's pivot over to our first listener question, and we're going to talk to Sid. He's in North Carolina. He's looking at ALB Albemarle.
Hi, Justin. Good evening. This is Sid. I have this in my radar just for a few days, and today I saw some downtrend. I'm not sure whether do you think this is a good technical and the buying point for the long term. I also have the Rio Tinto already, that probably 5% loss and less than 1% of my portfolio. But which one of you prefer, and do you think any one of them for the long term? We don't have to do the comparison, but thank you so much for the wonderful knowledge and guidance that you are giving to all of us. Thank you so much.
No problem. Now looking at Albemarle. Is that how you say it, Luke? Albemarle?
That looks right. Albemarle.
Yeah, it's the world's largest lithium producer. And on the technical setup, it is definitely in a downtrend from its recent high back in November, around 330 and change. Now it's down to 193. So a pretty quick descent here. And I've always said I'm not a huge fan of lithium when it comes to investing in the green energy revolution. Why? Because it's all about supply and demand. Too many people focus on demand and not enough on supply. And lithium, it's a salt. It's pretty easy to get. And so I think that's the issue here and why it's now in a downturn and analysts are downgrading earnings expectations for this year and next. Do you think that's the ultimate reason why this is now in a downtrend, Luke?
Could be. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, from a valuation perspective, it looks pretty decent. But, you know, valuation, as you and I have talked about, multiples are not the be-all, end-all of investing. And certainly I would agree with your thesis on this one.
Yeah. And pre-pandemic, it was earning $4, $5, $6 a share. Now it's last year it earned nearly $22 a share. So if there is some sort of mean reversion back down to that mid-single digit level in earnings, this stock is easily going to be cut in half from here or probably more. So that's my worry and why I've never been a huge fan of lithium as an investment. Now, when you look at Rio Tinto, that's completely different, right? They're both in the basic material space, but lithium is globally diversified, and it's not just reliant on one particular raw material. It is iron ore, as I talked to, I think, yesterday on the show. We talked about Rio Tinto along with they have copper, aluminum, diamond, gold, et cetera. I'd much rather be in Rio Tinto than I would Albemarle, correct?
Yeah, no, I certainly agree, too. It's what they teach you in business school, that the only free lunch in investing is diversification.
Yeah, and Rio is quite diversified, whereas Albemarle, I can never say that.
Let's go with ALB. Let's talk about the ticker.
ALB, definitely not. So terrible technical setup as well on ALB. Now we're going into a quick break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. Or if you're listening via our live stream right now, give us a call right now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
stock.
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Food, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments.
Hi there. I wanted to pick your brain about the Triton, TRTN merger I was just made aware of this morning. The stock was up to 82 and some change from 60 and some change the day before on the close. The deal is like $65 in cash and $16 in stock of the new company. I'm torn as to whether I should just take the 82 or wait it out and do nothing and take the 65 in the new stock. Thanks.
All right. This is Triton TRTN, which is being purchased by Brookfield Infrastructure Partners, BIP, and it is a mix of stock and cash, mainly cash, which is good, but a certain portion is in stock. And so it's going to have a bit of volatility based on that underlying stock and how the market prices in the odds of the deal actually being completed. As of right now, there hasn't been a lot of volatility since the merger announcement. What would you do, Luke? Would you just sell it and move on?
Yeah, so here's how I like to think about mergers. You see this price pop here right after it's announced. That means that the market typically thinks it's going to go through.
Yeah, it went from 63 all the way to about 83.
All the way to 83. So then what does it become at that point? Really, it becomes essentially an investment in cash.
Yeah.
And from there, you're losing your ability to get the equity premium or a value premium or any premiums from taking on risk in the market. So in a situation like this, personally, when something is trading like cash, it's trading like the merger price, I don't see a reason why to hold on to it.
Yeah, you're talking about $2 difference. And this is going to take 6 to 9 months to probably be completed?
Yeah.
Yeah. So especially with where treasury rates are now, you're getting better than that by just going probably buy treasuries, right?
Yeah.
So and with very little risk of the deal falling, or, you know, with no risk of the deal falling through when you buy treasuries. Now, you obviously want to think about potential tax implications. Maybe you wait a little longer to get to long-term capital gains, if that might be an issue. Maybe you bought it 10 months ago and you wait 2 months, you get to long-term capital gains. That may be something to think about if it's in a taxable account. But usually it makes more sense to just sell it and move on. And there's opportunity cost there, as Luke said, and you'll probably find better opportunities. Right? Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Now, Kyle from South Texas says, I'm a believer in CCL, which is Carnival Cruise, and think it will make a comeback to 30. The debt on hand is the only thing that is keeping me from doubling down to lower my cost average. What do you think? Luke, what do you think of Carnival Cruise?
You know, cruise lines in general are an interesting thing, because before, in the middle of the pandemic, I thought that entire industry would die. Mm-hmm. From a valuation standpoint, it doesn't look too bad. It's price to book 1.9. That's not terrible. Its enterprise value to forward-looking EBITDA is 10. From a technical standpoint, potentially staying away from this one for a little bit.
Yeah, that's my kind of sentiment. Is I do think long term the cruise industry is going to remain viable. However, they took on a lot of debt. They issued a lot of shares that are going to dilute shareholders forever going forward. Right, Carnival Cruise went from pre-pandemic, they had 710 million shares outstanding. Now they have 130 billion shares, or sorry, 1.3 billion shares outstanding. So they nearly doubled their shares outstanding just to stay away from bankruptcy during the pandemic. And obviously that's going to weigh on earnings potential for shareholders longer term. And the technicals, although they've strengthened since the lows in October, that's mainly because the market strengthened. They've underperformed overall. So like you said, the technical backdrop is pretty poor and something to keep on the radar. But I don't like companies that have just excessive amounts of debt. So I'm passing.
Especially when rates go up.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when rates go up. Now we'll take a break. I'm ready, or we're ready, and inviting your questions on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. So don't forget to call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point looks into the story behind this question. Are we in a freight recession? And the trucking and transportation company J.B. Hunt Transportation Services reported their earnings results for the first quarter on Monday after the bell, and they missed both on profits and revenue. They said volumes and revenue per truckload decline amid a, quote, freight recession. And this is coming from President Shelley Simpson. She said, "We are in a challenging freight environment where there is deflationary price pressure for an industry that continues to face inflationary cost pressures." And you're kind of getting these lag effects of policy, right? The cost pressures are not abating as fast as the shift in demand for goods overall, because that's what freight issuers, freight companies move. They move physical goods. And obviously we've talked about the demand for physical goods declining. But Luke, as you know, physical goods are only a relatively small part of the economy, about roughly a third, versus the services side is much larger. So do you think this is a true representation of where the economy is today?
I mean, it could be. If you think about it, the freight market is one of the most volatile markets there are, because it can go from incredibly hot to incredibly cold instantaneously. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, this is really being driven by the fact that you had an economy where liquidity was thrust in at such ridiculous quantities and then pulled out in one of the quickest tightening cycles in history. So this all makes sense to me.
Yeah, and physical goods is the first thing that kind of goes, right?
Exactly.
Your habit of... if you have excess money in your pocket, I remember when I was younger, I had friends that were not very fiscally sound, and they would get a paycheck and they would be like burning a hole in their pocket, and they would just need to go out and spend it. And so for the vast majority of the population, that's kind of how they are. They get an extra few dollars in their pocket, and whether that's from their job or for the government, they go out there and buy something. And now that's not nearly the case as much, and that's why you're seeing the pullback in demand. Now, what Simpson said is that based on an evaluation of how carriers can perform in the current environment, it would be very difficult for spot pricing to go significantly lower. So she's kind of calling for a bottom in pricing. So is this more of a sign that that these transportation companies or shipping companies are becoming more attractive again? What do you think, Luke?
Potentially. I don't necessarily maybe agree with her contention that it's a bottom on pricing. Certainly if it was.
You think that's talking her book?
I think that is talking her book a little bit. I mean, the reality is the spread on spot rates versus contract rates is still as high as it's ever been. And that's going to have to narrow a lot before we can conceivably say that we're at a bottom.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that now is the exact time to invest in it.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that the market reaction hasn't been that dire. The stock is actually up since quote unquote missing earnings on Monday afternoon. So net income was for the quarter was $197.8 million or $1.89 a share. And that's down from $2.29 a share a year ago. and analysts had expected $2.01 per share, and revenue per load fell 17%. So that's a pretty big miss, but kind of built into the market. And maybe that is that a reflection of what to expect this earnings season? Do you think these the expectations kind of across the board have come down so much that these are going to be easy hurdles for companies to get over to kind of quell any market negative sentiment?
Yeah, it goes back to what we said about Tesla. They didn't miss earnings because it's been revised down so many times.
Yeah, exactly. And so very interesting story there. And obviously, the goods market is important, but is not the most important part of the market as a whole. Now, let's keep things, or the economy as a whole. Now, let's keep things moving and go back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. Love the show. I was just calling up about Union Pacific Corp, UMP, trying to find out if it's worth buying. I own a small position. I just wanted to hear what you guys think. Thank you.
This is Union Pacific. It kind of ties right into the freight recession we just talked about, or transportation stocks in general. And Union Pacific looks to be struggling a bit. Its relative strength is only about 44. Earnings this year are expected to be roughly flat, and analysts continue to downgrade those expectations. And remember, Union Pacific is one of the largest, is the largest rail transportation network in the Western United States, across 23 Western states. And it did great during the time of globalization where everyone was importing things from China. Luke, do you think they're going to do nearly as well over the next decade as business shifts more internally and into Mexico?
With deglobalization, I wouldn't say so. But also, you got to think about some oncoming regulations in terms of freight through train.
Yeah. Yeah. With all the, what was the city?
East Palestine.
There we go. Yeah. And the hazardous material and such, and potential for them to have to retrofit all of their trains with better braking. I think that's certainly possible. Technicals remain in a downtrend, making a series of lower highs and lower lows. And obviously, the economy is slowing. So overall, I would not be buying this right now. It's probably fairly priced, but in a downtrend. You don't want to be buying things that are fairly priced in a downtrend.
10 times its book value.
Yeah, so I would pass on Union Pacific. Now we're heading into a break. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
I do each weekday is host the Invest Talk podcast. I truly enjoy helping investors, and I know that every question counts and every answer I provide will be unbiased. You, the caller, get to chart the course for each Invest Talk podcast. Call with your questions anytime, day or night, 888-99-CHART.
On the next Invest Talk, the story behind this headline, 10 financial lessons you should understand. Steve will get to that tomorrow, but let's pivot over to the SEC chairman, or commissioner, excuse me, Gary Gensler, and he's defending his agency's recent crackdown on the cryptocurrency market, and there's a lot of detractors in Congress, but he's saying that he's never seen an industry so routinely breaking securities laws. He said, quote, "I've been around finance for 40 years in one way or the other. I've never seen a field that is so non-compliant with laws written by Congress and confirmed over and over again by the courts." Do you think that's accurate, Luke, or is he just being a party pooper?
I think there's a little truth to both sides of that argument there. I was reading a Bloomberg article the other day, and the point that he made is that it is clear from the actions of the SEC that their intent is not to try and create a regulatory framework for crypto to flourish. That's not what they're getting at. And I think that makes sense because it is all of our caveman or cavewoman instinct of when you get burned, you don't go closer to the fire. Mm-hmm. And what happened over the past year and a half was crypto burned badly. It burned with Silvergate Bank. It burned with the collapse of FTX. And because of that, he's going to bring down the hammer as hard as he can.
As he should. And he's doing that with the largest U.S. crypto platform, which is Coinbase. And they're preparing to sue the company for allowing investors to trade unregistered securities. Now, many of these crypto firms say the rules aren't very clear and they don't know which cryptocurrencies the SEC considers securities. And they've been lobbying Congress to write new regulatory rules that exempt crypto from the typical SEC rules. And to me, this smacks as saying, hey, we don't like your rules, so we want to try to make new ones. It kind of reminds me of FTX and SBF, right? Wasn't he doing the exact same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it goes back to the fact that these aren't exchanges.
Yeah.
Exchanges, again, don't have clients. Exchanges are just venues for people to meet and transact. These guys are brokers in the traditional sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're holding assets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gensler says he believes the law is very clear. Even though the crypto firms are saying it isn't, he's saying they're very clear. And he says they've explained the rules to them, but they just simply don't want to comply. And he says, quote, we have a whole field in crypto that understands the law and that they are providing exchange services, broker-dealer services, clearing services of crypto security tokens. And, you know, others within Congress are saying that their regulatory style is inflexible and doesn't have nuance. Do you think that's accurate? Do you think it lacks enough nuance in saying, okay, crypto is separate? Or is it, you know, or is that going a bridge too far?
Maybe we don't necessarily heed the opinions of Congress people who are part of the blockchain caucus.
You mean that they're being lobbied by these crypto companies to push against the SEC?
The revolving door of regulation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are other members of Congress are saying that there's plenty of guidance out there. And so I agree with you. I don't think this is something that is a widespread sentiment with Congress. It's just our system, you know, if you have enough money, which obviously SBF did for a moment until he lost it all. And Coinbase obviously continues to be a public company, be able to raise capital and use that to lobby Congress. And didn't they set up an entity in Bermuda recently?
Yeah, I believe that's true.
And wasn't FTX set up in Bermuda as well?
Yes, it was.
And so what's the history of companies that were set up in Bermuda?
Sounds to me like they're trying to skirt U.S. regulation.
Exactly. So it's very interesting to see them, see the SEC really take it to these firms. I think they're kind of fed up, right? They're saying, we've given you tons of clarity and you're still not compliant. And so I think the whole headline that they're cracking down or being too hard on crypto is probably more out of frustration. Would you say?
Yeah, I 100% agree, because there are real risks to the actual physical economy in the world that we physically live in.
Exactly, exactly. And guess what? For all that crypto is, they cannot get around. Everyone says you can't regulate Bitcoin. I completely disagree, because we live in the physical world. Until we become completely in the ether, in the internet, like the Matrix, then the government will and can regulate this industry.
The first three Matrix movies, not the recent one.
I never saw the recent one.
Bad.
Yeah, not good. Okay. Well, let's keep things moving. Return to the InvestDoc Voice Bank. This question came in earlier on 888-99 chart.
Given the spending mess we're in, I expect to see a stock market drop of 35% to 50%. Once Biden has to pay the piper. As a result, I'm selling a few mutual funds with high risk and getting into treasury bonds yielding about 4.5% to protect assets. However, I'm keeping 80% of my current stock market money in defensive mutual funds like balanced funds, dividend-focused, healthcare, and defense, and will probably keep 10% in money market accounts to keep some powder dry to buy again once the market collapses. What do you guys think about this strategy?
To me, I see that strategy as a bit incoherent, to be honest with you. And the first thing that smacks me is the fact that you're saying, oh, I want to buy balance funds or a defensive equity funds. Do you really consider any equity funds truly defensive, Luke?
No.
Yeah. It's still equities, you know, just because it's titled defensive doesn't mean that it's necessarily defensive. It might be less risk than the overall market or than most stocks, but it's not really defensive. Just like, you know, the minimum volatility ETFs, go look at what the minimum volatility equity ETFs did during the COVID crisis. There wasn't a lot of minimum volatility there. So that's the first thing is don't just buy into the title of a fund that you're buying. The second thing is, you know, I don't want to get political. We never get political on the show. I think it's a bad way to think about investing. I think marrying your politics to your portfolio is the surest way to make bad investment decisions. Would you agree with that, Luke?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So the first thing is whether you love Biden, hate Biden, love Trump, hate Trump, that should be completely irrelevant. You should never think about that. Your feeling, your emotional feeling towards a particular politician, a political party. It's about what is likely to come down the pipe, whether you like it or not, right? The actual facts on the ground, okay? And I'm a firm believer that, there's a lot of people that are stuck in this 08 mindset where they have PTSD and they think, okay, I need to avoid this massive market drop in equities, which, you know, we just had a pretty big one, especially if you were focused in tech stocks. You got a nice 35% drop in those stocks last year. So it certainly can happen. But a broad drawdown of that magnitude, especially after this, you know, what are we down from the highs last early in 2021 or late 2021? We're probably still down, what,
15%? 15%?
Yeah. So you're talking about another 35% from here. You know, I'm a firm believer that the Fed and the powers that be, not only are they still fighting that same war, which was a deflationary shock, and you can see that with the COVID crisis reaction, is that they threw everything in the kitchen sink at it to avoid a deflationary shock. So what are they going to do next time? Maybe not as big, right? Because they probably went overboard. But not only are they still going to fight a big deflationary shock, but they are going to they're probably still overdo it, okay? And they have to because of the debt situation is in that, as you talked about. No country that has ever controlled their own currency has defaulted nominally on their debt. They've always inflated away that debt. And they did this. We did this in the 40s and 50s, post-World War II. From the mid to late 40s all the way into the early 80s, we inflated away our debt from the tune of about 120% debt to GDP ratio post-World War II to about 30% in the early 80s. And now we're back to those levels, but we're probably going to do the same thing again. Wouldn't you say that, Luke?
No, I agree. I think the one thing you got to keep in mind is if for no other reason – the fact that we've never defaulted on our debt is because people in Congress hold stocks too. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the largest unforced errors you can do to not raise the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
So I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. And once again, long term, it's about creating an inflationary environment so that over time the debt gets inflated away. And so those that tie their political biases to the markets as a whole, to the economy as a whole, to their investment strategy are going to be flying one way or the other. You know, it's one of those things where if one president is in office, if you're a Democrat and a Republican is in office, you're going to be negative generally on the economy and vice versa. And that makes absolutely no sense because the president has pretty small amount of impact on the economy, especially on a short-term basis. And so that's what I would encourage you is to have a little bit more clarity on your strategy. And I would probably avoid a dire deflationary bust scenario and positioning for that because the powers that be, they can't allow that and they likely won't. Now let's get to, now this is Invest Talk. Let's play two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hi, Steve or Justin. I had a question today about Wheaton Precious Metals, ticker symbol WPM. I've held this stock for about 3 years now, and I'm up about 55%. And it looks like it's about to either break out of this week or maybe all-time high. If you could take a look, think I should trim the position or get out of it and take some profit, let me know, please. Thank you. Bye.
Well, we own wheat and precious metals for clients, and it is not a miner, not a gold and silver miner. It is a streaming company. And that is distinctly different. And it's different because what they do is they invest. They basically take their capital and they invest in all these different mines throughout the world, and they collect a stream from that, which if gold prices go up, gold and silver prices go up, then they make more money. But they're not going to be quite as volatile as a lot of the other miners who have more operating leverage to gold and silver prices, but their business is going to be far more consistent, right? Look, if you look at their earnings trends, I would imagine on your screen, you're seeing that consistency as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, this is near an all-time high because gold and silver prices are near an all-time high. Now it's pulled back a little bit off that recent resistance, but it looks like it probably needs to consolidate to just head higher. I would not be selling this. We are continuing to hold Wheaton Precious Metals, WPM, and I've held it for a long period of time. All right. Now, Steve and I have been telling you for a while that we are in a new market environment, and these cycles that this new cycle that we're in is a part of life and a part of investing. You enter new periods. It's not going to be the same as previous periods, and you have to look back at history and adjust your portfolio to fit the times. And there's usually analogs, and that's what we try to do, is look back many decades to find the analogs that fit for today, as we kind of just alluded to. So if you feel like you are not sure if you're aligned with the new market environment, the new cycles, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Steve at our company, KPP Financial, located in Irvine, California. If you don't know, that's just south of Los Angeles. And it's where we practice parallel investing, which means you invest right alongside our clients. And we operate with the same philosophy, which is independent thinking and shared success. So you can take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone or GoToMeeting by heading over to investtalk.com or give our office a call at 800-557-5461. The sooner you reach out, the sooner we can help get your portfolio optimized. Now let's talk a little bit about market positioning. And I thought this was interesting, is that short sellers are now positioning for a potential recession by boosting their bets against the consumer discretionary sector and backing away from their shorts against consumer staples. So consumer discretionary was the most shorted sector in the S&P at the end of the quarter, with 5.8% of shares shorted outstanding. Consumer staples short interest dropped from 5.6 at the end of last year, or the average of last year, down to 3.4. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Why do you think that's just a product of that shift in consumer demand for physical goods dropping, or do you think they're offsides, Luke?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think they're offsides, and I do agree with you. I think it's a byproduct, a second order effect, if you will, of consumer demand. But certainly, you know, I think a lot of the change has to do with people's different feelings in the most recent couple months on whether or not we're going to have a mild or a moderate recession.
Yeah, and you know, the jobs market, which is clearly weakening, not dramatically, but clearly weakening, that's going to have an impact on consumer discretionary. The lower transaction numbers for homes certainly is impacting what people buy for their homes. I just moved in a new home. I bought a bunch of stuff. And so you can see how big of a demand that the housing market can create for physical goods. And the consumer staple side, usually consumer staples don't do very well in an inflationary environment because they can't keep up. They can't raise their prices fast enough to keep up with their input costs. But inflation expectations, or inflation in general, has just started to come down as well. So that's certainly helping that part of the market. And so I think that's really what's driving this. And I think that's the big question, is they're positioning for a recession, and will a recession actually come this year? I think I'm in the camp, Luke, that a mild one will come. Do you think we'll have a recession this year?
I'm in the mild camp as well.
Okay. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here each and every weekday to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom, and our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Good day, gentlemen. This is Jim from Miami, and today I'm calling about Porsche Automobile Holdings, ticker POAHY. I have a decent-sized position in this, but I'm getting, like, conflicting information. Fidelity says it has a 9% dividend. Merrill Lynch says it has a 3% dividend. The price is fluctuating up and down, but I've been buying it on these little dips. And it just seems like a good company for, like, the EV play. And I believe the profit margin is pretty good. But can you just tell me more about this company and if I should keep investing more money into this holding? Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Well, this is Porsche Automobile Holdings, and this is basically a holding company for Volkswagen shares, and it owns a controlling interest in Volkswagen. And I know there has been a spread in kind of the ratio here, and Porsche was cheap for a while. I haven't actually looked that up recently, so definitely something to look into. But the reason you're getting conflicting reports is because you're probably using bad data, and some of those data would be backwards looking and looking at what the dividend has been in the past and then prognosticating what the dividend could be going forward in another database. And so, and remember, this is an OTC company, and they pay, looks like, twice a year. Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, May and July. And so that's why when you're getting the free data on, what did he say, Yahoo Finance?
I think he said Fidelity, too.
Or Fidelity, yeah. Information. So you don't know really what you're looking at exactly. So I wouldn't be buying this for the dividend. This is more of an EV play, and basically you're owning Volkswagen. And Volkswagen is one of the better car makers in the world, right? Great brands, and historically much more profitable than our domestic producers typically. But with what's happening in Ukraine, do you think they'll be as profitable?
Yeah, but potentially not. Energy is becoming more expensive. Production's kind of taken a back burner. I will say, though, for a lot of people that do call in and do want to look at EV plays, I think it is wise to look at established automobile companies like you are.
Yeah, exactly. So if you are looking to play the EV market, this is definitely a much better way to play than, you know, your Rivians of the world. So I would give it a thumbs up if you're trying to get that type of exposure. Now, lastly, let's pivot over to a story that likely will come through this weekend. That is Bed Bath & Beyond. One of the favorites, what, Reddit board stocks, meme stocks?
Wall Street Bets. That's
Wall Street Bets stocks. And remember when people were trying to create some massive short squeeze, and they succeeded from time to time in getting the stock price much higher. But it looks like they are now ready to file for bankruptcy. And it's just a lesson here that over the short term, any stock can go to almost any price if there's enough buyers behind it, right? But long term, it's going to be based on earnings power, and obviously Bed Bath & Beyond didn't have much. Right.
Yeah, I don't know what the opposite of going to the moon is, but this is what it is.
What did Tesla describe their spaceship blowing up as?
Oh, they called it a spontaneous,
rapid disintegration.
Unexpected disassembly.
Ah, gotcha. Now, it didn't blow up. It's a rapid, spontaneous disassembly. Yeah. Well, that's what's happening here at Bed Bath & Beyond. It's more of, I guess, would you call this rapid? I guess slow. Spontaneous.
It's a slow burn.
Yeah, exactly. And they need to raise about $300 million from share sales by April 26th to stay out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. That's less than a week away. And now with the stock trading at the close today at 30 cents per share, it's likely that they're not going to be able to do that. And especially because they need shareholder votes to get this approved. And it's now largely held by individual investors who have just held it all the way down from when they got it squeezed from, $4 all the way up to $28. Mm-hmm. That was the last pretty much short squeeze in August. And now it is going to be worth zero. So it's just definitely a lesson to you out there that getting your tips, your investment advice off of Wall Street Bets and Reddit boards is probably not the way to go, right?
I always like to say they only post it on there once they've made their money.
Exactly. It's a lot of pump and dumps And I'm sure a lot of people made money, but it wasn't the majority of the people playing these type of names. Now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Steve and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, but you can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.